Welcome to the Men of 8 Gang podcast, episode 334. I'm Steve Borsch, and I am here at IoT Hack Day in St. Paul with Tim Elliott.
Hey, it's good to see you.
Yeah, exactly, in person. And Phil Wilson.
No problem. And it's good to see that you decided to wear the same thing you wear every time we podcast in, so really should put on some clothes. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Well, I figured they wouldn't mind if I wore my pajamas. Okay, well, we should mention, too, that our buddy Graham Thickens is off today, so he's doing his occasional Saturday morning adventures with his bride. But
read into that what you'd like.
Yeah. So we're actually going to bring in Justin Grammons in a little bit, who's one of the organizers of IoT Hack Day.
I think he's the organizer.
He and Patrick Delaney are the guys driving it. And but first, we've got some Minnesota stories to talk about.
All right.
And
we'll do that. But we should talk about just briefly what IoT Hack Day is, so everybody, you know, we're up to speed on that. We've have how many different teams did we see there? Half dozen?
No, 10? I think there's eight.
Eight teams. Teams that are creating devices that solve problems via Internet of Things connectivity and that sort of thing.
Right.
It's pretty exciting. So anyway, yeah.
And some of the projects include some guys that are building Raspberry Pi sensors that people can put outside their homes and talk in real time about.
I noticed you took an interest into that one. Are you still having a problem with Flying Cloud Airport near your house again? Is that a little bit.
but also, other projects like a pill dispenser for
monitor,
seniors.
Yep.
And that will also take a photo so you can actually verify that when you got a notification that mom or dad didn't take their pill, you can actually call them, say, hey, take your pill, and then you can verify whether or not they've taken their pill. So, I mean, there's all kinds of great projects, and we'll talk to Justin a little bit more about
that. But speaking of sort of an Internet of Things play, I did want to mention that our friends at Fluid, they're based in Minneapolis and work out of Cocoa. They actually hit, which is a smart water meter, they actually hit their goal or actually surpassed their goal by a few thousand dollars on Kickstarter to fund the Fluid smart water meter. They went past the $95,000 goal they had set. I think they did like 112.
116,000.
Congratulations fabulous. To them. It's always great to see that those that hit their goals. And,
so when this is done and shipped to the backers, are they going to make this available to regular people to buy?
I'm sure they will. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm sure the goal would be to sell as many
to
as
make
they
money.
Could.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
So that's very
so. Congratulations to those guys. And there's the kind of keeping on that sort of IoT creation theme
and hacking all of that. Yep.
Saw the article about libraries adding makerspaces.
You know, and I did not see this article. This is great.
Yeah. No, I thought it was very apropos to what we're at today.
So why don't you tell what's going on?
Well, it's basically a Star Tribune article that talks about the various area libraries that have some sort of programs, and I'm happy to say that for those of us down in Dakota County, we're well represented, and there's going to be a really nice space at the Egan Library that's in process, but it touches on the various programs in across the whole metro, and it's good to see this. It's not only just for kids; it's for other people.
Yep.
And you know, they're making available stuff like 3D printers and other things that, you know, we might not want to buy ourselves, you know, but we certainly have applications.
And I noticed that, you know, in the article they highlight a $4,500 recording studio or something.
Yeah, you're putting to. Yeah.
Is that considered maker? Is that, you know?
I don't know. I guess you could make a kind of, you know, argument for that.
I suppose you could.
Yeah. Well, look at what story.
So, yeah, that would have made me a pioneer in the maker space.
Well, but
yeah.
look at places like StoryCorps. This initiative that now public radio is involved deeply in, and they put up their first booth in Grand Central Station, and they were doing, people record stories, and so they'll bring in their parents or grandparents, for example, and record their
right
their immigration story and all kinds of, I mean, it's really, really well done. So this is very cool. And in fact, just a real quick thing, the Edina Art Center on just off Highway 100 in Crosstown, for years has had things for slide duplication and film editing, you know, being able to transfer your 8mm films to VHS tape going back that far. And they've expanded the sorts of creative things you can do there, but they don't have any space, and they're certainly not ubiquitous like libraries. And I think this is a great transformation for libraries. I think it's pretty cool.
Well, you think about libraries, you know, in the next 20 years, we're going to get away from having physical books and more... Right. You know, loaning of digital materials. It's good to see the space being repurposed into something like this.
Well, yeah, and then it kind of continues the education piece, but at the same time still gives that sense of community, as libraries were sort of this hub of community activity for a long time. I mean, you know, us growing up, we all remember trips to the library, and I don't necessarily know if that happens as much as it used to, but yeah, it's great.
It's yeah, really great. Yeah, absolutely. This next story about Go-Kart Labs in Minneapolis, I thought was pretty interesting. Phil, did you put this in, or Tim?
I think that was Tim, yeah.
Yep. That United Healthcare and AARP are among the first to try Go-Kart Labs' education-based platform with content provided by brands.
What's called the Big No or something like that?
Yeah. K-N-O-W.
K-N-O-W, yes. No, it's yeah. Like,
no, don't you dare watch this. Well, and so what's interesting is you know, this whole online learning space continues to explode. And the one thing that, you know, it's in United Healthcare's best interest, for example, to actually educate people on healthcare-related issues. And so rather than burn up a doctor's time, for example, sitting down and explaining the basics of what's going on with your knee, you know, for an hour, instead mandate that the patient watches something in advance. They come in, have you watched that yet? No. Okay, well, we'd like you to watch this 10-minute overview, or, you know, and so on. And people that want to know more can dive deeper and deeper and deeper into, you know, their own specific health issues or maladies and all of that. And I see this as a real cost saver as well for these big
organizations. Sort of, Phil, it's sort of like in your space here with branded content too.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, it's more educational in nature, but it is an interesting direction, and it's good to see a local agency kind of taking the forefront here.
Yep. Yep. It's a great specialty too. So that was interesting.
So yeah, that's great. I mean, Go-Kart's trying to keep things moving along. So
right,
iMation.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Last week, so.
We did, and they're making moves, but I don't know if they're gonna really turn any corners here.
No,
yeah, I hate to put them on the death watch, but because the last people we put on the death watch actually turned the corners.
Yes.
Maybe we should put
Uber
them on.
Jolie.
Maybe we should put them on and hope that they turn the corner here.
The Death Watch is not necessarily it's a negative thing.
It's a negative thing. We don't expect them to
But they can come back from the edge.
They could.
You know, it's like,
they could.
It's a miracle. It's what it is. It's a miracle.
But I don't necessarily see that in the cards for iMation, but who are we to know?
Well, it looks like they're down to under 150 employees now.
Oh my lord!
Which is like, remember, there were thousands and thousands of people that worked there.
So this particular article is about some executive moves, and also they acquired another company. Is that what that was about?
I'm trying to remember. Yep.
Yeah.
So anywho,
what did they acquire that will pull them back from the brink?
Connected Data Incorporated, a Silicon Valley startup working on cloud sync technology. So, I don't know.
Well, that's brand new stuff.
Yeah, it is. good thing that people aren't working on that,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Good thing that Dropbox and, you know, Apple and...
Code 42.
Yeah, everybody's got that space sort
like,
of...
Yeah, nobody's doing
yeah,
that.
No. Yeah, no. That's not a good place to be, actually.
Yeah,
so, I don't know. I think they really need to reinvent the whole company's mission, because really, if you think about it, what they were known for is pretty much now... antique technology.
Yeah.
So
they've appointed interims.
Yeah. Well, we'll keep an eye on them, but I don't see a huge a huge future.
Yep. Yep. Well, there's a story here about a student, McAllister College, who created an app for vets to prevent night terrors.
And so is this on an Apple Watch?
Actually works on Android and Apple, and I believe Microsoft as well.
Really?
I was looking at it. Yeah, it's an interesting thing. I just caught it with Carol Levin did a piece on it. It was inspired by his father's return from Iraq and suffered from some PTSD and night terrors. And so basically it's a monitor of your sleep level and helps detect the onset of a terror and tries to modify your sleep in some way. So
So it's not just monitoring, it's actually taking action.
Yeah, it's actually taking action, whether it's a vibration or something that may pull you out of a deeper sleep or something like that.
Yeah.
So I thought this was very interesting to see. And their team is called The Cure, and they're working towards it. And it's called My Bivvy.
For Bivouac.
Right?
Yeah. Place to sleep.
And so they're actually raising money through Kickstarter, so check that out if you're interested in donating to the cause. They picked up a $1,500 prize from a mobile app competition. So they're well on their way, and I can't think of a... Yeah, it's a pretty noble cause, I would say.
It's yet another example of things you didn't expect coming out of the... the whole wristwatch area.
So
that's good to see innovation.
Well, and I'm wearing my Apple Watch as we speak, and I keep thinking about the fact that want this to do more.
With his cool band.
He's got his cool band.
He doesn't have that
military band thing.
And he's got a case on it that makes it look even larger.
I know. What was the plan on that one, Steve? I know you. I remember you talking about this this case and band.
Well, so first off, the Apple band. Now there's a leather one that replaces. There's that you can buy a third party. The Apple band just bugged my wrist. And when I saw this, I thought, oh my God, this thing's so huge, it's going to really bug me. But it turns out it's actually a little bit more comfortable. But also, I kept banging the watch on stuff. I kept catching it on things as I walk by a doorway or whatever, and I put a couple of nicks in the side of the watch, and so I said, I'm gonna get a better case. So this case, I'll put a link in the show notes, is I actually saw at Best Buy. They had a whole array. This thing wasn't even shipping yet on the website, and they had a whole array of cases, and this was included. It was like a $60 case, but it makes it look kind of like a G-Shock, like a Casio G-Shock watch.
It actually reminds me more of a TI calculator.
Yeah, it does. It really does look like a calculator.
From the 70s.
Size
of
your wrist, yeah.
Okay. Well,
not that there's anything wrong with that.
Well, that means it would go with my Mad Men wardrobe.
It would, yeah, definitely.
But it's not actually, it doesn't tie into the Apple band. It actually, it's a case, it fits inside the case, right?
Yeah. It just makes the, already, I mean, Phil's got his, and that's a 42 millimeter, right?
Yes.
So Phil's got the large Apple Watch on here, and it looks, reasonably large, but not overly large on his wrist.
Large.
But I have to say that looks huge.
Yeah.
It kind of looks like an Invicta watch for that sort of thing.
So. I don't know.
Well, I'll also take a photo of it so everyone can see how huge it is,
Everyone
can email and comment on the post for the podcast.
How wrong Phil and I are.
So either A, you can abuse me verbally, or B, you can say, that's a handsome looking watch.
All right, if that's
the
way
you want. Is that a watch or a tank on your wrist? What is that? I don't know.
All right.
Oh, my God.
So.
All right. Well, one of the organizers of this event that we're at right now, there are two organizers. One is Patrick Delaney, but the other guy who's been driving a whole bunch of events is a friend of the show, and we've known this guy for a long time, Justin Grammons, who sold his company to Code 42 and is now working for Code 42, but he is someone who is passionate about giving back, and he's passionate about getting people engaged and people being makers. And so that's what these hackathons are all about. And Phil, you were involved with them, obviously. Mobile March.
Co-founded Mobile March together. Yep. And Justin has always been one of those guys that's been on, I always think, just one step ahead. I mean, he got into mobile very early on. He's, you know, he saw the opportunity with Code 42 and what they're working on, and now has really been enamored with the IoT space, and doesn't just, you know, putter around with it himself. He really has evangelized the whole concept. And so let's bring Justin on.
Let's do it. Okay, Mr. Justin Grammons, how are you, buddy?
Good.
And so I thought it would be kind of cool to have you describe the event today, and quite a turnout. So tell us about the event and its genesis and what's going on today.
Sure. So IoT Hack Day was kind of born out of this idea of bringing a bunch of people that are working in the Internet of Things field together for one day and to see what they could create. You know, it's good to have some sort of time constraints and force people to kind of get stuff done at a time, right? Sometimes things linger if you don't have a deadline. So the point of today was, you know, what can you build in 12 hours? And the Internet of Things is kind of different than any other type of weekend hackathon or startup weekend or, you know, stuff like that. People, at some of those events, people will dream up an idea, you know, on Friday night or Saturday morning, they'll assemble a team, and by the end of the day, Sunday, they'll have, you know, something that they could possibly bring to market, you know, or have some sort of prototype going. Mm-hmm. IoT spans, there's a big hardware component to this, and so leading up to the event, I asked the teams to get whatever supplies that they need ahead of time, form their team so they can come in kind of ready to hit the ground running. Because, you know, if you have to wait on a part from China, you know, your product might be sitting there just in limbo for like a week. So the whole point of this is to kind of come in with these teams already formed ahead of time, have your general idea what you want to get accomplished, and then kind of see how much progress you can get done. And at the end of the day, if it's a good product, it's a good idea, people think it's got like some sort of a novel or unique and useful value, then, you know, they should be rewarded. And last year we had one big winner. This year we're going to have three winners. We're going to have a first, second, third place. And so that was some feedback that I got from last year. Last year was kind of a winner takes all. And so it kind of, the first place will get more than the others, but I decided to kind of break it up between three teams this year.
So cool. Did you see the teams from last year return this year and then more teams join, or is it a new crew that have kind of come in?
Yeah, a little bit of both. I mean, so it's all new ideas. So there's no like repeat teams that are trying to kind of do their same thing over again. But with regards to the people that have attended, I'd say there's probably a good 50 to 60% of people are new actually this year than over last year. Which I think kind of shows the growth that's happening in the Internet of Things. There's more people kind of coming into this space. And since last year, you know, now there's an IoT Minneapolis group meetup that actually happens. Last year was kind of spawned a lot out of the Arduino MN group, but now there's kind of a specifically IoT Minneapolis focus group, and that's allowed us to get a lot more exposure to a lot of people. And there are some people that I know that are here that are just here just to walk around and just observe. So a little bit of that happened last year, but I think there's going to be a lot more of that this year. And I really encourage that. I encourage, you know, hey, there's a bunch of people getting together building some cool stuff at Minitronics on Saturday. Why not stop by for an hour? You know, anytime. For sure. I mean, it'd be great.
You know, the great thing about the IoT Hack Day from the normal hack days that you go to, you know, in this tech space is hack days tend to be all screen based and keyboard based and everybody's sitting on monitors and there's nothing really, you know, tactical or tactile that you can see and touch, and IoT is, you know, all about, you know, soldering irons and alligator clips and all sorts of cool stuff.
And so, wires.
And wires, lots of wires and lights. Ooh, pretty lights. But it's I think it's one of the, last year was a great experience, and this year it's, you know, it's in a different spot, a little bit different spot, a little bit more close quarters, but I kind of like that. I mean, you really feel like there's more people working alongside, probably a little more collaboration, that sort of a thing.
Well, and what kind of organizations, I mean, obviously the organizations I'm sure that are sponsoring the event are ones that are in the space or have an interest in the space or are actively making things that are in the space? I mean, what kind of sponsors?
Some of them are actively making stuff in the space. Some of them want to just contribute to the community and just like seeing an event where people get together and are kind of building technology here in Minnesota. So there are a few sponsors that kind of fall under that category. Code 42 and DevJam kind of come to mind. On that, you know, there's not actively, you know, hardware development going on or things that are basically in specifically the IoT space in that area. There are other, you know, cloud players. So Exosite is one of them. They've been a huge supporter of us over the course of the past couple of years. Quite honestly, going back to the Arduino group, Verizon, been an awesome supporter. Microsoft as well. So a lot of those players, you know, we're looking at, you know, Microsoft Azure, right? They launched a big thing just a couple weeks ago around IoT and getting into machine learning and all types of data analysis. So it's not just the devices themselves, it's all the back end sort of stuff you can do.
Have you seen any action in the IoT space with their distribution of Windows for the Raspberry Pi?
I've read about it and I've seen lots of talk. I think there's a lot of hackers that are already used to Arduino and a lot of the tools that they're using. Mm-hmm. And in some ways the big players are a little bit behind. Like they're trying to catch up. They're being like, oh hey, look at me. I'm cool and trendy, right? I'm gonna provide these things that normally I never really would in the past. And so I think a lot of people that are developing at this level today that already have their fingers in it are probably not too interested in that. But that's not ideally maybe who Microsoft's going after. They're going after the new people that are coming in that are just kind of evaluating, hey, what can I put together here in a weekend? Oh, and I've heard of Microsoft. What are their tools like? So, you know, I read about it and I'm seeing some sort of stuff, but in the circle that I'm in, a lot of people are kind of like, oh, okay, well, I already have my tool set that I use, and so I'm kind of very happy with
that. So is that still pretty much Python-based, or are other languages and scripting kind of tools also being used?
People are coming up with all sorts of new things. So Go is one of the languages. That's Google's language. I've been mm-hmm. seeing a lot more talk about that. JavaScript, even so, there's a lot of these JavaScript-type frameworks that will kind of ride on top of some of the more lower-level Arduinos. Arduino development. So that opens it up to, hey, I'm a web developer. How can I make this light blink? Yeah. And, you know, all of a sudden you're exposed to, you know, a million different developers, right? It opens it up to, you know, a lot more of a open sort of like tool set to be able to develop the stuff.
Well, I was actually delighted to see Multitech on here because I actually saw them. I went to an M2M event at Verizon downtown Minneapolis 2 years ago. And they had some booths set up, so I was just wandering around talking to people and so on, and here Multitech had a booth, and I asked the guy a question. I said, so, because I was, again, no, it had to be 3 years ago because my dad was still alive, and I said, okay, so here's the deal with my dad, and he's got this, put a router in there, he's got Wi-Fi and all that, so, you know, I can connect up and so on and so forth. I said, so with the whole Internet of Things space, what kinds of connectivity solutions do you guys have? At that point, they actually had a low-level modem set up with antennas that would go on the roof, and you could actually a company could actually connect to two or more services that could either be multiplexed together, or if one of them failed, you could fail over to the other service. So you could have both Verizon and AT&T, and they could get the subscriber cost down to $5 a month to send small packets of data back. And, you know, so all of a sudden I started to look at that and thought, oh my God, this totally opens up connectivity possibilities without having to go in and say to some senior citizen, oh, by the way, if you want this pill box out here, you're going to have to pay $45 a month for an internet connection or, you know, $20 a month. And they're like, I don't have that kind of money. This way you could just roll it into the cost insurance company and pay the $5 a month for the connectivity. So it's cool to see some of these groups on here that I've always seen, like Arrow or Multitech, that are these big companies that are all focused on, you know, big ag and big oil and all of that, but they're interested in the makerspace.
Yeah, yeah, they are. One of the things that I said in the kickoff was, you know, the next billion-dollar company is going to be, you know, the kid in the garage next door hacking something together.
And I think you had a picture of that kid. That very
kid. And so those companies see that, you know. They don't. They it's not going to come from their boardroom, or it's not going to come from, likely not going to come from one of their investors or somebody that is an employee of the company. It's going to be come from somebody that has an idea and kind of a itch that needs to be scratched.
Yeah.
And so the more they can kind of spread out their tools to these developers, you know, get them engaged and involved in the services that they're providing, the better.
Yep.
So in the next 12 months, where do you see IoT kind of headed?
Well, I see it, right now it's just kind of a buzzword.
It seems to me like it's, and we have this discussion on the podcast often, that it's mostly in an enthusiast kind of space, a hacker kind of space, and we don't see any huge consumer goods companies really doing anything. I mean, we've got SmartThings doing some stuff and some others. Maybe Apple's going to do something, but nothing's really happened in the past couple of years.
Right. Yeah, and it's always like, okay, you know, IoT's going to be
big. This year is going to be the year.
Is it really
going to be the year of IoT, or is it going to continue to be this hacker
it's almost over
enthusiast deal? Yeah. Quick. Yeah. Well, I mean, 2016, is that the year where it really breaks through?
I think the consumer space is totally different than the industrial space and the business space. And that's where I think you're seeing a lot more IoT going on, coming out of the M2M type of situations where these smart factories, smart cities, smart grid, like those are the things that actually make an impact and can actually save companies money and can affect a lot of different people. The one-offs, I'd be honest, the consumer space would not be the space that I would jump into, right? I wouldn't be like, oh, I'm going to go ahead and create an internet-connected, you know, light bulb or internet-connected coffee machine. So there's a team here that's doing that, you know? A lot of that are just kind of genesis of ideas of like, okay, what could possibly happen in the future? And in some ways, it's still a nice to have. I mean, I was thinking yesterday, so before I left for work, I pushed on my dishwashing machine and I said, you know, start in 4 hours, right? So I left and I got home and I'm like, did I push that button? Oh yeah, good. I'm glad I did. I'm glad that I pushed that button. I'm glad the dishwasher started and everything ended up working. And then I thought, well, what about if this thing would have been connected, right? And what about if after 300 loads or whatever, it would actually text me and say, you're probably running low on detergent. Or even better, how about if it actually ordered it from Amazon for me, right? So imagine now these devices they go beyond just simple, oh, why would you want to have your refrigerator connected, to actually starting to provide, you know, value. Now there's a lot of things need to happen, right? How's this thing gonna know to connect to Amazon? How do you set it up? How do you configure it? All that types of stuff. And those things are still kind of fuzzy on the edges. But I think there's going to be start being ideas that we haven't thought of yet. The technology's there. In a lot of ways, it's solutions waiting for ideas, you know, that are just like, you know, where can we actually apply this? We don't really know yet.
Or you see needs. Speaking of your dishwasher example, we have a dishwasher that's 9 years old, and they don't make the parts for it anymore. It's a two-drawer. It's a big buck one.
Well, you need to 3D print your parts then.
We could do that. But so my wife never turns it on when we're going to leave the house. I never turn it on when we're going to leave the house.
Because she's afraid that something's going to go wrong.
Something's going to go wrong, and we're going to be flooded all over.
Water everywhere. Yeah.
But if it was a smart dishwasher and there were sensors that could tell what was going on, or if there was errors, or there was leaks, or whatever, it would automatically turn it off.
Do you think a company's actually going to put sensors in for
absolutely
leaks? I don't think they would.
We never admit
that it would leak.
But we never run the washing machine or the clothes dryer either if we're going to leave the house.
Can you just put a moisture sensor into your SmartThings hub for that?
Well, I have one in my sump pump for my SmartThings hub, and I also have a multi-sensor sitting on my thermostat. That's the one where SmartThings did a blog post because I was awakened at 3 in the morning because the temperature in the house had dropped to 57 degrees. And it was like I woke up and I was just freezing my butt off. And so I went down.
Thank God you had a sensor for that.
Those of us that don't have filters for that,
hold your nose.
We just put on an extra blanket is what we do, you know?
All right.
Or we get up and we...
Justin, you mentioned, you know...
why would you have a connected refrigerator? So has anybody ever figured that out? Why would you have a connected refrigerator? What goes on in a refrigerator that you would need
the
to be connected to?
The only thing I would want one is to know if there are variances in the compressor. I'd want to have a support organization I could pay money to that would look at all of my appliances and be able to look at any fluctuations in power draw,
okay,
for example, because then they could tell the compressor was going out in the refrigerator.
Very first world kind of
very,
a problem.
Yeah, very you know. Much a first world.
What I'd like to see and what I'm looking to do personally is how can I save energy, whether it's a connected thermostat, whether it's some sort of a wall plug that controls the power when I'm not using the device, but I'm still plugged in, all that kind of stuff, so I can save money on my utilities.
Well, you know what else is interesting?
And I haven't seen really a great solution for that yet.
Right.
Well, but also, did you see the article about Xcel Energy replacing all the streetlight bulbs with LEDs? They're going to put 100,000 of them in over the next few years.
Mm-hmm.
And not one mention of any use, of any connectivity. Hmm. With those, and so I thought,
give them time.
Are they looking at that?
They just heard about LEDs.
They just heard about LEDs. Well, we got to wrap.
Yeah, but, Justin, let me ask you, because I always talk about when we talk about you and the things that you're doing. I always mention that I feel like you are sort of on. You're just wired to be a little bit ahead of, I don't know if you call them trends, but. New things. What is it that you see in the next year or 2 years beyond IoT? Possibly, I don't know. Maybe it is IoT, but what do you see evolving? I'm asking you to be that thought leader sort of a thing. But again, I think that you have done it. Not only seeing them coming, but you're one of those people that have acted on them. So, what piques your interest right now?
Yeah. Well, IoT piques my interest, number one, right? So that there, I've been seeing that growth over time. I also really think that there's a huge opportunity for drones, and I think I've mentioned this in a previous podcast as well. But I think that we haven't figured that out yet.
Right.
It's one of those things like, well, why would you want things flying around? I don't understand. I don't get it.
Right.
And again, once we start putting more and more thought. And the technology increases, there is a huge opportunity. There's a lot of legal, laws and stuff like that need to be, adjusted.
Yeah, they just in the last day or two, they've
the feds want to
do a little regulation of drones
to registering drones.
I think that's
the first step for before confiscation.
Oh, would you shut up?
They're going to take our drones. Stop
Let's
them.
Let's start the DRA, the drone.
The Drone Association.
The NDA, the National Drone Association.
That's right. Yeah.
But I also think the other thing that people aren't thinking about is a lot of the big data that's going to be generated off of these devices, wherever it comes from.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And the predictive analytics you can do in that space of over time, like you're talking about, whether it be a compressor that's going to fail or whether it's going to be my heart that's going to fail, right? I mean, there's a lot of data that's going to be generated off these devices, and we haven't been able to quickly be able to pick out the signal and the noise. Yeah, and so there is already a big movement, but it's only going to continue of like, how can you quickly analyze all this data and actually put some intelligence to it and then start acting on it? It's not just important to be like, oh, I want to turn on and off my dishwasher, right? It's going to be based on this data. I need to start taking actions on things. Mm-hmm. And then it's not even human intervention anymore. It's machines acting on that data, right?
Yeah,
so that's like the next evolution is based on this data that's coming off these machines, humans don't even need to do anything anymore. That's where like AI comes in, right? Artificial intelligence, machine learning is really going to then go ahead and drive decisions in the future.
Yeah. Do you see this, we talk about AI a lot, and we talk about, the Terminator effect of everybody thinking that AI is going to take over the world and machines are going to rule us, et cetera. Do you kind of fall on that same side as the Hawkings of the world that say it, and the Gates of the world that say you need to be cautious with AI and be watch where we go with AI and what do we enable it to do and that sort of a thing?
Yeah. I think AI or just technology in general.
Yeah.
I have two kids, they're 2 and 4 years old, and it's just that I cannot imagine the world that they're going to be in, once they're 18 years old. And I definitely am very cognizant, while I love all this Internet of Things stuff and things connecting with each other, I'm very cognizant of people continuing to have conversations, right? Sitting down and talking
yes.
to each other rather than texting or you know, always being online. You know, there's something to be said about the human interaction. And so, you know, with regards to machines taking over the world, you know, I'm not too concerned or worried about that, but I'm cautious about technology changing the human race, and we end up losing, you know, what makes us unique, right? Our creativity, our friendship, our, you know, our soul, you know, mm-hmm. those types of things is what I worry that you know, next generations might lose.
Right.
Well, is that part of what for everyone listening? There's a component later today about LED costumes at IoT Hack Day. Is that part of doing this for the, you know, to have people bring in their kids and be able to build LED costumes? Is that part of the?
Yeah, yeah.
To kind of have some fun with it.
Certainly one of the components of that. Yeah, yeah. You know, Dan McCreary is the one who conceived of this idea, you know, he has a strong passion with getting children involved in technology, but there's always a parental component to that, you
yeah,
know, and
yeah.
in those cases, and he has been a mentor for the local Coder Dojo movement as well as me, and it's so much fun to sit down with the kids there, and parents now are starting to jump in and get involved with that, and it's something that they can work on together, and you know, if a child finds something, you know, unique and interesting, usually the parent wants to be involved with that. They
yeah.
should be,
yeah.
right? So yeah, that's definitely, there's two sides to it. One is that, you know, we definitely want kids to stay up on the current trends, right? We don't want the United States and children in general to be left behind with kind of the next technology advances. But you also want to work on something fun, and it's great to work with, you know, your child if they have a passion for some of this stuff, you know, encourage it.
Nice job. Great. Well, listen, you know, we'll put a link to the show notes to IoT Hack Day, obviously. And how do people get signed up for IoT Weekly with you? I mean, you were putting together a curated piece every week, right?
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that. Yeah, it's iotweeklynews.com.
Okay.
And we put it out every Wednesday, and it's basically articles across all areas of IoT. So we talk about big data, we talk about security, we talk about maybe the new Kickstarter thing that's going on,
right.
just general news, business type stuff. So yeah, and I've been doing that for more than a year now, and I have a lot of fun with it. You know, I read about this stuff all the time,
yeah.
And they've created, I'm running this on top of a system that helps me build it. I'm not,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
You yeah. know, there's no way you can just get flooded with this stuff. But yeah, it's the goal is just to kind of give you a digest of what happened in IoT for the past week.
Stellar.
So,
yep. Nice and there's job. A good archive there too on your website.
Yep.
If you want to go back a few months.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a full text search too. You can just go in there and type stuff, and it'll find
cool.
find articles
good.
Related to that.
So, will Excellent. There be a wrap up on your website or IoT Hack website for this event?
For this event, yeah, yeah. IoTHackDay.mn is okay. the website, and yeah, we will have the winner announced and all that stuff.
Good.
Everything.
And so if you are a big fan of the podcast and just can't wait for it to be posted, and you're listening to this on a Saturday early afternoon, come on out to Minitronics tonight at 8:00. It's open to the public to come take a look at all the results of all the work. And
yep, you know, totally
man,
free.
It's always a great deal. Totally free.
Totally
there you go.
You go
make it a
not?
Date night.
Yeah,
that's
make
right.
Make it a date
Let's
night.
Go see some IoT hacks.
Come on. Then we'll go out and do shots.
Right. There you go. There's an idea for next year. I'll have to include the shots.
There you go. Justin, thank you very much yes. for having us. Thanks very much for taking time with us.
Yep, I
yep.
appreciate it. Thank
Thanks.
You.
Bye. Well, that was a fun conversation.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
great.
You know what time it is, I think, Phil?
I think it's time to release the horses.
No, I think it's
oh.
time to put the tinfoil hat on and talk a
oh,
little bit about
well, that too.
Privacy.
Okay.
Don't you think so, Steve?
No? I do. One moment.
Oh no!
I'm going to
awkward segue. Can we start? Can we start the segue over?
Yeah, I don't know where we are. Where are we? 38. Okay.
What is it? Recording.
Testing. Okay, that was fun to meet with Justin. And
do you want to try that again?
Yeah.
All right. That was great
again,
too.
Wait a minute. Do it again.
Shut up.
Really?
I'm going to leave that in so everyone knows a mean
oh,
Phil is to me. Okay,
Phil.
So I don't necessarily think this is a tinfoil hat thing. This is this is really about, this article, it's the Obama administration opts not to force firms to decrypt data for now. So this was a big deal because, you know, now that Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple, pushed back on the FBI, James Comer, the FBI director, making, you know, essentially putting a back door the iPhone and iOS and all of that. And so what's happened is, the punchline is, according to this New York Times article, is the Obama administration backed down in this bitter dispute with Silicon Valley over the encryption of data on iPhones and other digital devices, concluding that it's not possible to give American law enforcement and intelligence agencies access without also creating an opening that China, Russia, cyber criminals, and terrorists could exploit. And that's what every cryptologist in the world, especially in this country, was saying. I mean, everybody that knows anything about encryption says you can't build a back door without...
That's not vulnerable.
Not vulnerable because somebody's going to keep banging on it until they figure it out.
So once again, cooler heads prevail.
Cooler heads prevail.
For now.
For now. Yeah.
We're going to have to stay diligent. But okay, so then another big story.
The big story in tech was
Dell buying
EMC for an obscene amount of money.
$67 billion. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I don't know. There was a story that Graham flipped into the Flipboard magazine about from Wired about that these mergers are sort of two dead companies coming together.
Yeah.
And there's some truth to that.
I think there is.
But at the same time, what Dell's doing in putting these two companies together and then going private, they'll have some advantages in their space, enterprise storage and such, that their competitors who are public won't. So they'll be able to do some long-term things if they make the right moves.
Yeah. Well, so here was the one thing that I thought was interesting. So you guys know that I've moved my server to a hosting provider that provides SSD drives, right?
Right, yeah.
And the first company to break price was Bluehost, where they had a dedicated virtual private server for $149 a month, and you got 8 gigs of RAM, and you got, I think it was 100 gigs of SSD storage, so these solid-state drives are really fast, for $149. Now, I know that probably sounds like a lot to a lot of people, but boy, if you're running a company on it, it's dirt cheap. And the way that they did that was they bought these new blades, which is a co-computer on a card, and you can put, I think, 10 of them in a rack, a mounted box, and they went out and they bought these things, and of course, you sign up and they pay for themselves in a month.
Yeah.
Boom. So a guy like me pays $149 a month. I just basically, bought the blade. I mean, essentially, they're not that cheap, but I would assume that this whole EMC thing is all about major platform storage that they can provide to all these hosting providers.
Yep.
And that they can also...
And the government,
okay.
Yep. So it's a big deal. It'll be interesting to see how they compete with Amazon, who's also in this space, but as a SaaS provider of the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
Obviously, with Dell EMC, you'll be able to purchase it outright, which makes sense for data center providers to do. Right. It's a consolidation, which is not great for innovation, but it looks like an interesting combination.
Yeah, it does. Another story about Apple deactivating its news app in China.
Yeah.
And a lot of people that I read a lot of comments on these articles. We're pushing back, typical big company dropping its pants for China. It's like, no, you don't understand. I mean, if they didn't do that, then the Chinese government is going to start blocking things on iOS.
Clearly, a business decision. There's no doubt about that.
The thing that I found chilling about this is that the story is that an American who had information in that app on his phone that he got downloaded in the U.S., was deleted as soon as he got to China. Automatically.
No, it was deleted or was
yes.
it was inaccessible?
No, it was deleted.
It was deleted.
Yeah. So what they're doing is they're not only blocking content that the governments don't want you to see in China, which I totally get, and Google does that as well. But they're actually deleting content that you brought into the country that the government doesn't want people to see.
Yeah.
And I think that's an important distinction. I don't know, Phil doesn't, but...
Well, I'm just trying to figure out exactly, you know, you think about where does the violation come in? Is it something that is personally yours? No, it's something that's available online. I mean, it's not deleting something that's content on your phone.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, it did.
It did. It deleted the content that's on his phone.
The cached content?
Yes, that he downloaded in the
browser.
US.
In the browser.
No, in the iOS news app. The Apple News app. Well, so it'd be just the same as
if you guys did a deal with the
Chinese government and your BuzzFeed News app, you deleted stuff that they didn't like, which I can't imagine what it would be. But
well, the first thing
I don't know
everything.
No. I mean, you know, I think the Chinese government loves all the entertainment stories. Entertainment
stuff. Well, but the thing is the way that these apps work, as you probably well know, is that when you refresh the app, especially when you go to another country, like if you go to iTunes, for example, mm-hmm. When you're in another country, it knows based on your Apple ID that your home country is the US and it won't show you UK available content. But if you create a new Apple ID while you're in the UK and pull up iTunes, it shows you all of the UK content. And none of the content that you have from the U.S. is available. And so they're basically, it's like region encoding in DVDs. And so they're basically removing, so the cache is removed from iTunes.
Okay.
If you do that.
So what you're saying is it's not a nefarious kind of thing.
I don't think it's a nefarious thing at all.
It's just what happened. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And they're just blocking stuff.
I'm still trying to figure out how something, you know, in this article in The Atlantic, which refers to a Reddit piece about, or a Reddit street or thread about.
Subreddit.
The subreddit. Yeah. About, I'm not sure I understand what was downloaded on a device that was deleted.
It was a news story.
It was a news story, but it's not necessarily downloaded. It's available via the news app. It's not necessarily...
But it's on his phone. The actual data was on his phone that then he noticed was deleted when he got to China.
The data was on his phone.
Yeah, it's in the, obviously, cache.
In cache, but it's not necessarily on his phone. It's in the browser.
Okay, well, it's in the app.
It's in the app.
Yeah, I just don't think it's... I don't think it's nefarious.
All right.
No, maybe, I don't think it's nefarious. By
maybe I'm making a big deal of it. I just thought it was kind of chilling. But yeah, whatever, we'll see.
Tim is not going to China.
I'm not going to China anytime soon.
Yeah.
And I don't even
sure
have a...
Stop pounding on the table.
So iPad Pro, who's going to get one?
Yeah, that's why I kept this story in. This is something that Graham flipped into the Flipboard, so I'm assuming he's excited about this.
No.
So you guys excited about this?
No. No.
So it's one step closer after securing FCC approval.
Yeah.
I don't know. The thing is so frickin' big.
Yeah. It's huge.
I really
don't.
Mr.
Drew, huge.
It's huge.
It's huge. I'm going to get a bunch of these.
I just don't see myself using it. Now, you know what's interesting is if I was going to buy a big device, I like that new little MacBook. It doesn't do what I need it to do. I mean, I couldn't do what I do on this... this 13-inch MacBook.
Graham's got one of those, right?
The new little thin one?
The itty bitty one. I think he's got one.
I mean, it's a nice product, but anyway. So CNN had a story. This is just
This is something that I would expect to see in BuzzFeed, by the way.
Woman live streams herself while driving.
I think it was in BuzzFeed
at
one point. Yes, it was in our feed, but yes.
So she periscoped. So here's the question for you guys.
How big of a dumbass?
So here's the deal. She not only makes the bad decision to drive while she's obviously drunk, but then she periscopes it.
Yes.
Is this really a native ad for Periscope, or is this just a sign
of the... This is a native ad for Periscope.
Is this a sign of the times that people are so out of it that they actually think that this is a good idea?
Oh, this is funny.
I think it is. I think it's just... It basically says... what do you got going on there, dude?
I think it's
interesting that it's just one more sign of, you know, there's a whole lot of ignorance out there, I mean, it's like the first thing. Okay, first, like you said, Tim, the first bad decision.
Right.
I'm going to drive home drunk.
Right, right.
And then you're driving home and you're saying, you know what?
I need some distracted driving to go along with this.
I need to distract my driving, but I need to tell the world just how stupid I am.
That's right.
But the beauty is that somebody says, hey, there's somebody periscoping, and then, you know, I think the 911 person said, what's periscope? Oh, and then the cops got her. So they arrested her.
Oh my God.
Mid-drive.
So, well, somebody that was watching the stream, and there were, I don't know, 80 or 90 people watching this live stream, they recognized where she was.
Yes, right.
And it said, hey, that's so-and-so in Florida. And the police were alerted, and they found the car weaving, presumably.
Jeez. Unbelievable.
It's just, I don't know.
The only thing that's going to be worse is if she'd had a breath locks on her car, and she had somebody in the car that blew into it to get it started for her. So, just
all right. Unbelievable. So now's the time, Phil. It is time.
Now?
I think it is, yes.
Okay. To release...
The hounds.
Not the hounds. The horses.
The horses.
Steve's security tip of the week.
All right, so here's the tip. The NSA has apparently compromised low-level Diffie-Hellman cryptography.
Oh, no.
Not my Diffie-Hellman.
Used in SSL.
Ooh, that's a problem.
And so you can protect yourself by modifying your browser. And I'm going to put a link in the show notes to an article on the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Now, this is a little geeky.
A little geeky?
Yeah, I know.
But we have to recompile our browser?
No, that's not geeky at all. No. There's a little Apple script if you're running a Mac. I don't know how you do it on a PC, but you can actually relaunch.
Switch to a Mac. That's what you do.
But the link is to how to protect yourself from NSA attacks on 1024-bit DH. No, that's a little geeky.
Well, they didn't want to say Diffie-Hellman.
That's right.
Well, but if you are, in my defense, this is why it's a security tip, because in my defense, if you are using, if you are relying on SSL,
yes,
and you go to a specific site and you click the padlock to look at the certificate, and you see that it's a DHE, which is the lowest level 1024-bit certificate, you are going to at least have the knowledge that maybe you shouldn't use this site insecurely or potentially compromised, or if you're going to be sending sensitive information, because there are more and more organizations that are putting in SSL certificates for field-based submissions. So you can do a form and you can upload something and, you know, yada yada. And a lot of times those are NDAs they've signed with companies, you know, legal law firms are using it. Well, if it's a DHE 1024-bit certificate, you don't want that stuff to be compromised, either by the NSA, or if the NSA's done it, that means that the information may be available, others may know how to do it. There's actually been a white paper written on it. So anyway, you can read the thing, you can download the little Apple script app that I put together based on what they said, and that will automatically launch Chrome for you. If you're a Firefox user, you can go in and make a change. There's also instructions in here on Windows and Linux as well. And if you use OpenVPN, there's an issue there. So it's
great.
Yeah, I know. But this should all be taken care of by January.
Okay.
Because of the new standards that are coming out. So anyway, so that's
don't sell any secrets to China between now and January.
That's right.
Well, and here's the other thing.
So the cat's going to change their posture as well next year too.
Yeah.
And as mice, we just have to adapt.
Yes.
Well, so
good thing we're faster
than the cat. If you're interested, I'm going to put a link in there also, which was in the article. It's called "How's My SSL?"
Yep.
And it'll tell you whether or not your SSL client is okay or not. And here was the kicker: I opened up Safari. Based, of course, on WebKit, the open source WebKit. How is my SSL? Your SSL client is bad.
And there's
no fix for it.
Mine is probably okay.
Yeah, so is mine.
So I pulled up Firefox, and I had already made that change, so that's okay. Then I pulled up Opera. Opera's okay. Then I pulled up, you know, there's a Mac app called Fluid App, which allows you to create site-specific browsers, So I've got all these SSBs, like for Facebook, because I don't want Facebook tracking me everywhere. So I have a separate browser for Facebook, and those are all insecure. All
great, because those are all WebKit.
Those are all WebKit. So it's a WebKit issue. Yep. And anyway, so that's.
So it says the Safari browser supports cipher suites that are known to be insecure.
Oh, yep. That's not
what
good.
Makes it all bad.
That's yep. Not good. So.
Yeah. So I don't know what to do about that, but
well,
I use Chrome.
I use Chrome anyway, so it's okay.
Well, just do the fix with Chrome, and you're good to go. Good.
So all there right. you go.
Okay,
it's
so
your tip of the week. It's time for
the cool thing of the week.
The cool thing of the week. It's the O the week section of our show.
That's right, Tim.
It is.
What's cool?
Well, the Chromecast. They came out with two versions of Chromecast recently. There's the video version, which many of us have been using for a while,
right?
Which has just been improved, faster speeds for the Wi-Fi and some other features. Not anything for me to really go out and replace the current Chromecast that I use, but they have come out with something called Chromecast Audio, and it's an interesting little device. It's $35, just like the video version.
I had
never
heard of
this. But it's tuned just for audio, and it's probably not for people that aren't on Android. So if you know, like. It doesn't do AirPlay, so you can't do any of the Apple stuff. But if you're on Android like I am, you're able to stream directly high-quality audio to any speaker that you might have in the house. And you could make even your own poor man's Sonos if you wanted. If you had several of these throughout your house, you could sync them up so you could have the same music throughout all the levels of your house, just like a Sonos.
Right.
All for $35 a pop. So.
That's actually a cool idea.
That is
a cool idea because I have actually two Apple Expresses in my house that are connected to systems, and for that exact reason. What will be interesting to know is the reason that I like these Apple Expresses, and I've got a small system with just two tweeter stalks and a subwoofer in two different parts of the house, and so I can turn it on so it comes out in my family room, and then in the dining room I've got another system, and then I have another system downstairs. What's really interesting is you can stand in the kitchen, so one ear is listening to the family room system, and the other ear can kind of hear the dining room system and also the lower level system. All of them are in sync. There's no latency at all. And apparently this was because Apple did this express-to-express latency compensation of some kind, and it'll be interesting to see for $35 if these devices, because that's one of Sonos's big sales pitches is that, guess what, you know, you can walk through the house and you have this seamless music anywhere because we synchronize everything, right? We calculate the latency between based on your connection, and so it'll be interesting to see if they do that.
And it's supposedly, and it's a cute little device now.
It's a little
puck sized thing, a little small puck that's got different. You can get in different colors.
Right, that's right.
So, yeah,
yeah. I haven't decided. I'd probably get red, maybe.
Really?
Red? Yeah. Maybe.
I don't know. Yellow would be kind of exciting.
Yellow might be good. Okay, all right.
Do they have any rose gold? Or
no rose gold, sorry.
You mean pink? No, I don't think so.
No. Okay, Phil, what about yours, buddy?
Well, you know, I always kind of like to cruise around some of the geeky gadget sites and come up with something. So this was, I thought this was kind of cool. Kind of really off the geek chart. The Odin Projection Mouse.
Cool.
Basically projects sort of a trackpad-like diagram on your desktop, and inside it is basically a trackpad. So it's kind of very cool. So it was a kickstart. It's hit 216% of its goal. So you can now pre-order the Odin.
I always like a product that's named after a Scandinavian pagan god.
That's right. You know? That's right. Well, speaking of Scandinavian pagans. There's a new cool thing.
Now that's a segue.
Yeah, wow, there you go.
That's a segue.
There's a new app been written by some Swedes called NordVPN, and it's for the Mac OS
and Minnesotans.
And Minnesotans, right. But it's it's relatively inexpensive if you buy a year in advance, which I always do with these kinds of services. It's $4 a month is what it works out to. But the big thing that I've been reading about. There's actually been a couple of people that have written posts about this that are complete VPN nerds that I follow. I mean, these guys are like, they know everything about
as you would
about yes. You know. So I just like, okay, whatever you say. But what's interesting is the reason that they love this, and again, it's for the Mac only. One of the reasons I love private internet access is that I can have up to 5 devices, but it works on my iPhone, my iPad, and my Mac.
Right.
Then I have 2 left over, so I have my wife's iPad and my wife's Mac. But this one is interesting because it allows Tor over VPN.
Mm-hmm.
It also has more servers more servers within country than private internet access, but they're tuned to offer enhanced performance for streaming.
Yes.
And I have been connecting to my flat in London, hint, hint, using my VPN so that I can watch certain British shows.
Uh-huh.
And it's not necessarily as fast as I would like it to be.
Yeah.
But they also do something called double VPN, which is basically double encryption. So it encrypts the connection both ways and then does it again. And so that adds overhead. You could choose whether or not you want to do it.
I have to hand it to these Scandinavians, though. I mean, they did this obviously so they could watch U.S. Netflix.
Exactly. Or
they even have a Netflix shortcut.
They do. I know.
That's just great.
I know. All right.
So it's only $4 a month?
If you buy your advance. Yeah. Oh, it's okay, $8 a month if you just want to go month to month.
No, that's not a bad deal, actually.
It's not a bad deal at all. I pay $39 for EIA.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm thinking.
Internet access, yeah. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Still my favorite, though.
Let's take a look at upcoming events. I think the one thing that I noticed on the list, I want to make sure that everybody comes out and joins us. I think there are still tickets available for the SMB MSP next Friday. We're doing health and fitness and social media.
So. Yeah, that'll be a good one.
And the host or the MC or the moderator, brilliant man.
Really?
Yeah.
Me.
Anyone know?
I've heard he needs digestive enzymes, though. He's a little bit full of himself.
Stop! You're killing you.
He's a little full of shit.
Wow. Yeah, really. A little bit.
Well, yeah. Everybody is scored
a little bit.
I had to get you back. You got me 3 times.
I completely understand. I'm full of shit. That's okay.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. So anyway, the other one that we didn't really talk about is this Product Camp Twin Cities. I've never been to one.
Nor have I,
actually.
Okay.
And this has been, I don't know, I put this in the notes 5 or 6 years ago.
Seriously,
so this thing is an ongoing concern. Yeah. And obviously, there's a lot of product managers in the tri-state area that are coming in.
Tri-state area.
Well, you know, North Dakota.
Yeah, sure. You know. Yeah, you get your Dakotas.
Yeah, you get the Dakotas. You got Wisconsin.
You got Wisconsin. That's your quad state.
Quad states.
So, and Canada.
What about that? I think it's pronounced Iowa.
Iowa?
The one that's south of us?
Yeah.
That state?
That would be Iowa.
Oh, I see.
That'd be where the cool people are from.
Yeah. That's right.
So,
and then Ignite Minneapolis November 9th.
And I think they did a last call for speakers. I don't know if I just...
Yes.
I was thinking about speaking, yesterday. But then I couldn't figure out what I was going to speak
about.
Yeah, exactly. So I said, you know what? Maybe next year.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to tell a story about my great-grandfather, but I didn't think anyone would want to hear it.
I'd love to hear that. It would be interesting.
I'd love to hear that.
Yeah. Well,
so anyway, I know there'll be lots of things to talk about over the next week as we gather information. I'm off to New York City, so I'll see what's going on in NYC. So,
all right.
But whatever it is that's tech in Minneapolis and Minnesota, we'll talk about it next week on
the Minovate Gang Podcast.
Have a good week.
Thanks.